You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. The Arctic is a land of ice and snow, except with climate change, that is tipping towards more rain than snow. This is a shocking development with very big impacts, and of course, it is coming faster than anyone expected. Younger listeners may live to see the new wetter Arctic. Michelle McChrystal is a Canadian postdoctoral research fellow. She is with the Center for Earth Observation Science at the University of Manitoba. From Winnipeg, Canada, Michelle McChrystal, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Yes, thank you for having me.
To begin, why should the rest of us care whether it rains or snows in the Arctic?
That's a very good question. And I suppose it's a very potent one because, yeah, as you said, like the Arctic is so far removed from so many different people, but the Arctic has a huge impact on global climate, always has done. So in the first instance, in terms of how the Arctic is important in the general scale, is that with it having a large snow covering, that has a high albedo, which basically means that a lot of the sunlight and solar radiation is reflected away from the Earth, so it kind of acts like a global cooling mechanism. So it's very, very important in that sense in terms of like keeping, you know, a relatively, hopefully cooler climate. But the fact that it's changing a lot more rapidly is going to impact that in quite a very substantial way. But in terms of what we have found and what we have studied in the paper and the work that I've been doing this last few years is that, as we know, the Arctic, as I said, is covered in snow and ice. But with climate change, the snow is not going to be the dominant form of precipitation. In fact, it's going to change quite rapidly to rainfall. And some parts of the Arctic are already have experienced that change, this transition, as we describe in the paper, to a rainfall-dominated precipitation. And that has huge implications, one, for what I was saying about the fact that if you've got more rain and less snow, there'll be less snow cover, so it'll have an impact on the albedo of the Earth. But also it has other ramifications. So one of the things that one of the kind of motivating factors for the work that we have done was to look at how rain and these rain on snow events. So when we have snow cover and when there's an instance of rain followed by freezing temperatures, what that kind of means. So it can create ice layers within the snowpack. So either like at the top of the snowpack or within a snowpack anywhere across the Arctic. And that has quite serious implications for local people in the Arctic. So for example, reindeer herders and communities that depend upon reindeers and caribou and animals like that, you know, for their subsistence. Because the animals themselves, they can't actually make it through the snowpack or find it very difficult or expend a lot of energy to get through the snowpack, to get to be able to forage, to be able to survive. So you have a lot of these die-off events, a lot of starvation in these animals, which leads them to like this mass die-off events, as I said. Not only that, it has global implications as well in that one instance is for the permafrost, for example. When we get more rain on these lands, it can cause the permafrost to warm up or the land, sorry, to warm up and cause the permafrost to thaw. The permafrost basically is frozen soil, and within that you have a lot of carbon and other greenhouse gases such as methane as well that are stored within that soil. And as those areas get warmer, there's a lot more activity in the soil, so this carbon can be released, which there can exacerbate and can contribute to this increase in greenhouse gases, which of course everybody knows contributes therefore to global warming, to enhance global warming. And also, just another example is over Greenland. Whenever our results have shown that more rainfall is going to fall along the coastlines of Greenland, which is very pertinent because that's, you know, your glaciers there fall into the oceans along the coastlines. And if you're getting more rain in those regions, it's going to cause a lot more glacial melt, a lot more ice instability on the Greenland ice sheet, which therefore contribute to global sea level rise as well. There's quite a number of impacts. The Arctic is actually very important in the whole sort of global climate system.
It is indeed. So you're the lead author of the new study, New Climate Models Reveal Faster and Larger Increases in Arctic Precipitation Than Previously Projected. It was published November 30th, 2021 in the journal Nature Communications. How much sooner will this tipping point of rain versus snow come, and why is that important?
In the paper, we've talked about, in this research, we've talked about when this transition will happen, and although we can't give it like a definite that's going to change on this day at this date at this time, it's because global climate is highly variable. But basically what we did was that there's two different data model sets that we have looked at. So one that was produced about 10 years ago and then this most recent one. But with this latest updated models, we find that this transition can happen about 20 years earlier, so say around like 2070, 2080 for like an Arctic wide. Of course, that's just the entire Arctic, and the Arctic itself is a very diverse area. So when we looked at it regionally, we did see, and seasonally, of course, as well, since we know like wintertime in the Arctic is a lot colder than the summertime. And when we look at it regionally, we see actually a lot of the changes really occur in the autumn period. And again, we can see this like earlier transition between about 20 or 30 years or so. For example, one example that I picked out would be the Central Arctic Ocean in autumn. In the old models, again, they sit around about 2090, 2100. But these latest set of models, this latest model output is showing that to be around 2060, 2070. So again, this 20-year jump. And the fact that this is significant is the fact that, well, A, just shows that everything's becoming more rapid. These changes are becoming more rapid, which therefore means as a human society, as a global society, you know, for our animals and all these other, all life essentially in the Arctic has to adapt a lot quicker. We have to have faster mitigation strategies put in place, earlier adaptation plans, that we need to start making changes on a much more large and rapid scale. The fact that these changes are happening earlier and more rapidly than we've previously thought or previously predicted is showing that the climate change is becoming not worse, but there's greater change happening. So therefore we need to adapt and we need to change how we, you know, fuel our society, fuel our economies essentially to try and limit this. You know, while we look out to the end of the century, and these are all different scenario based, this isn't a prediction of the future in any way. This is just what could happen following a certain scenario. It doesn't mean that's what's going to happen, but it's to give a sort of guideline of this is what could happen. This could be the worst thing that could happen. So we need to make these changes. So I think it's like a kind of a call to action that the fact that things are happening and changing a lot sooner, a lot earlier than previously estimated.
I gather from your paper that scientists are doubtful now that we can stay below 2 degrees centigrade over pre-industrial. But if we make the effort and stay 2, maybe 2.5 degrees, will that matter when it comes to the rain-snow balance up north?
And we look at that in the paper. We take these three different like global warming scenarios. So we look at a 1.5, we look at a 2 degree, we look at a 3 degree. So what would happen to this transition in each of these different scenarios? And we find that within a 1.5 degree warming, a global warming limit, a lot of the Arctic, some parts will, but like those that are sort of closer, like in lower latitudes, around 60, 50 degrees north would be. But at a 1.5 degree global limit, a lot of the Arctic will remain snow dominated. At 2 degrees, some of it will remain snow dominated, some will become rain dominated, and at 3 degrees, most of it will be rain dominated. So it really does show that staying within these limits actually is very important, and staying well below the 3 degree limit. So I think at the minute, with current trajectory that we are on in terms of like global warming levels, I think we're closer to the 3 degree level. So if we were to stay within that, most of the Arctic will transition. But if we can, and as you said, most scientists are a bit skeptical of 1.5, even 2 degrees, but if we can make these push, this is why I was sort of saying earlier that it's really important that the transitions, these ideas and policies that are in place to try and counteract climate change and counteract the increases in CO2 and other greenhouse gases need to be pushed a lot harder and a lot faster than what they are, because if we're continuing on this path, these transitions will happen and happen earlier than we have anticipated.
Will the increasing rains affect the Arctic sea ice and how it's doing?
It will, exactly how, because with fresher waters, you can actually get an almost, I wouldn't say a regrowth of sea ice, but it allows sea ice to expand a little bit better than if it's just all salt water. But you're not going to have very thick ice because the fact that the ocean itself is too warm to allow sea ice to regrow. So you'd only have very thin ice if you did get this more fresh water at the top. And usually it will be a little bit, probably be a bit warmer if it's coming off the land, and it'll have a lot more nutrients in it, as I said. So it actually could contribute a little bit to a growth of the extent, not necessarily thickness, and that's what's really important is the thickness. And also if you get more rain on top of the sea ice, that can contribute to like melt ponds, that can contribute to thinning of the sea ice because it's usually warmer. That's just saying if there's already sea ice in the region and rain falls on top of it, it will impact that, the dynamics there. And also whenever you have rain on top of sea ice, it can allow greater solar insolation sort of can go through into the ocean again and will impact, you know, the phytoplankton and the marine life as well. So it'll contribute to like a growth of that phytoplankton, which will have, again, you know, further implications for the marine life in the Arctic.
Are there implications of the switch from snow to rain on human livelihoods in the far north?
Yeah, absolutely. As I sort of mentioned earlier, the impact it'll have on the reindeer herding communities and local communities that depend on that as a source of sustenance for their communities. And their cultural aspect of life as well, 100%. The fact that we're already seeing a lot of these die-off events occur with reindeer and caribou across different regions all across the Arctic is showing that this already is having an impact at the minute. And as we continue into the future, when we're seeing more rain events occur across the Arctic, it's going to really have a negative impact for those communities that depend upon that, but also as well for transport and for different infrastructure in the Arctic. If the whole climatological system is shifting in a certain way, the current systems that we have in place now probably won't be ready for that transition. They're not like adaptable to like a warmer environment, to more rainfall, like ice roads, for example, as well, for transport across the Arctic. If you're having more rainfall and less like freezing temperatures to contribute to having good solid ice roads, that will mean that, you know, transport of goods and transport of things like that across the Arctic will definitely have to be re-examined.
This is Radio EcoShock. You're listening to Michelle McChrystal from the University of Manitoba. We're talking about increasing rain instead of snow in the Arctic from a new study. Are we talking, Michelle, about an enhanced feedback effect here where more rain in the Arctic pushes more heating, resulting in more rain?
Yeah, I would say that's very plausible, because when we have a warmer atmosphere, it means that a lot more of the atmosphere can hold water vapor. And water vapor itself is actually a very potent greenhouse gas. So the fact that as we emit more CO2 and more methane, greenhouse gases are those that come from our consumption of fossil fuels, for one example, that itself contributes to a warmer atmosphere, which can therefore hold more of this water as a gas, as water vapor in the atmosphere. That in itself is a greenhouse gas, so that contributes to warming of the atmosphere. So therefore we get more ability to hold water as a gas, so therefore continually to increase this. Over the Arctic as well, because we have less sea ice, we have a more open source of water across the entire Arctic Ocean, which therefore, with the warmer atmosphere, can lead to more evaporation. And therefore, all of these systems in place, as you said rightly, has this feedback effect where we're getting a warmer atmosphere with more water vapor in it. Therefore, there's greater chance of precipitation. And because it is warmer, this precipitation will more likely fall as rain. So yeah, it has this positive feedback loop where the warmer it gets, the more rainfall it is possible.
At Oxford, climate physicist Tim Palmer warns records from the Arctic are spotty. He suggests we need a lot more data to know what will happen in Alaska, northern Canada, or Siberia. Your paper acknowledges the problem. What do we need to increase confidence about what will happen in this huge part of the Earth?
That's totally true, and I 100% agree with what he said, and it's something that I've said very openly, that the Arctic is a very interesting region to study, but one of the downsides of that is that we don't have as much data of the Arctic as we do, for example, of the tropical regions, just because it is a more inhospitable region to try and get data from. So for me, one thing I would really love would be to have more weather stations and more ability to obtain data in those regions. And for me, I think one of the best things to do that would be to get local communities, local people who live within the Arctic, get them engaged, get them involved, because realistically, for the next few years, a lot of the changes that are going to happen will be directly affecting people that live in the Arctic. So get them engaged and start putting out more weather stations on the Arctic land and more things like buoys across the Arctic Ocean. Basically, yeah, we just need a huge investment into observation stations across the entire Arctic. And I think it's very, very potent because the Arctic is changing more rapidly than most other regions of the planet. Sort of dictates that we should be putting more investment into trying to understand how it is changing, so we can get a better understanding and a better handle, and we can better adapt our models, so therefore we can make better projections into the future as well. So I totally agree that more needs to be done, more investment into those systems in the Arctic North is definitely necessary. But we had something, you know, the Mosaic expedition that happened last year where they froze the ice into the Arctic sea ice and let it drift for a year. you know, more examples of that. Of course, that's a huge undertaking with a huge financial investment, but there's some amazing data coming out of that already. So I think more cruises, more campaigns like that would definitely be a welcome for the Arctic.
The unimaginable changes in the Arctic are not isolated from the rest of the globe, as you say. Michelle, in your research work, you investigate large-scale teleconnections linking the Arctic to other parts of the world. Please take some time to tell us about those long-distance links.
Yeah, exactly. So my previous research, I've always been interested in, well, my interest has always been what drives the Arctic. So I've been looking at tropical regions and how that affects and drives the Arctic climate. But as you rightly said, changes in the Arctic also do impact the mid-latitudes. And there's been a lot of research into this in this past couple of years, with some scientists saying and arguing that it can lead to like a waviness of the jet, or it can lead to cold air outbreaks in mid-latitudes. And there's still some debate around that for sure. But it goes without saying that what happens in the Arctic doesn't really stay in the Arctic, and you get changes, for example, in like the polar vortex, which can make its way further into the mid-latitudes and cause these cold air outbreaks for sure. This idea of the change in the jets is still a little debated, but if it is true, or if it is a big impact, that again will bring with it, you know, the cold air that comes from the Arctic that will impact the mid-latitudes. And there was even a study done a few years ago that across Europe back in 2018 or 2019, that winter, there was huge snowfall events happened all across parts of Europe that probably wouldn't have happened if it hadn't have been change in sea ice in the Arctic that brought down like this cold, moist air from the Arctic and made its way across Europe and brought this like huge freezing temperatures and big falls of snow all across Europe. So that's kind of another reason why the Arctic and changes in the Arctic are so potent for those that live in the middle latitudes.
There are plentiful signs of a previous hotter, wetter Arctic long, long ago. Crocodile bones were found on Canada's Ellesmere Island. Fossilized tree stumps in Alaska reveal a conifer along Arctic seas that dropped its needles in winter when there was no sunlight. It's amazing stuff. Could we be heading there again over the long, long term?
That's hard to say. It's not impossible. As you said, we've had it before. Definitely it's not impossible. Whether we're going in that trajectory, I couldn't honestly say. I think we're definitely going towards a much warmer environment. And with that, there will come, you know, a migration of species, of different animal and plant species further northwards. So yeah, that is highly possible. Whether it will happen, I'll say we'll have watched this space.
But it's a possibility, yes. You know, for a long time, alarmists were discouraged, but given your paper and a dozen others rolling in about large-scale changes at the poles, is it time to be alarmed? Are you?
Yes, I would say. And this paper that I've done, I've always known that change is happening quite rapidly in the Arctic. I've spent the past almost 10 years working in this field, roughly. So I've always been very familiar with the fact that the Arctic's changing so rapidly. I think what kind of astounded me in this is just how rapidly and how quickly the changes are being shown and are changing. The fact that we have transitions happening decades earlier than what was previously shown in previous models. And
Michelle, what are the hot topics you and your colleagues are working on next?
Well, we're still focused on this idea of change in precipitation and looking at the extreme events, because while we're looking, we're very interested, and we've done the work now on the long-term mean, these changes of extreme events, extreme warming, extreme rainfall, which is what we have found across Canada this year already. In BC, they've had, their summer was extremely warm, and then of course they've had the floods there in this past couple of weeks. So we're trying to get a handle on these extreme events and trying to understand how they're changing and what the kind of, you know, contributing factors are. So it's going back to trying to understand what, you know, what's driving a lot of these changes. We know climate change is a key factor, but trying to understand the variability of it as well. So I think the more we know about the variability, the better we can understand the trends, as it were, the better we can understand how this will change into the future. So we're focused quite heavily on that at the minute.
From the University of Winnipeg, we've been speaking with Michelle McChrystal, lead author of the new study, New Climate Models Reveal Faster and Larger Increases in Arctic Precipitation Than Previously Projected. Find links to the news and science we just talked about in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Michelle, it was good to talk with you, and I'm sure our college radio listeners in Winnipeg will be happy to hear sort of one of their own.
That's good. Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. In the new carbon-charged world, you are listening to Radio EcoShock. broadcast around the world on radio and the internet. Find Radio EcoShock on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, the weekly show blog, ecoshock.org. Tune in, turn on.